Growing into middle age, I needed a hobby. Something had changed in me, and I had the drive, the need to take action. I started running, getting fit, pushing myself to be a better me. I felt like I was finally catching my second wind, my stride, once I hit 40. I'd managed to get 12 marathons under my belt, a few Ironman competitions here and there. I was training religiously, eating right, hired a trainer. I had it down to a science. I was training for the Boston Marathon qualifier. When I tore my Achilles, that really took the wind out of my sails. I was really down in the dumps by this point, and my wife, Colleen, she was so supportive. The injury gave me a fresh perspective, and I realized that I hadn't spent as much time with her as I should have, looking through the thoughtful gifts and notes over the years. I felt that she deserved more. She'd bought me a pair of binoculars several Christmases ago, having just moved to Maryland, and together we learned about the wildlife around us. We loved seeing the varying types of critters and birds in our backyard. So, with fresh eyes, I decided to forego the running for a while and take up bird watching together. She was thrilled, showing an interest as well, and even urging me to take some time off, to let my body heal. Maybe I could do a write-up for the news station, a change to my usual news reports. I began studying the birds of the backyard for a few weeks, sharing the binoculars when she was home. We felt the rekindling joy between us when she surprised me with news about renting a family friend's cabin over by Pittsburgh. Not a terribly long drive from us, about 3 or so hours. She knew that I'd been pretty cooped up in the house and thought it'd be nice to spend some time away together. I was thrilled. We decided to spend a few weeks at the cabin. Colleen printed out the information about the area. We were warned about the spotty service, so we brought our maps too. We left that Sunday morning and drove through the wintry Allegheny Mountains and just past the Ohio River, arriving at the cabin that night. The drive there had its moments where we wondered if our hatchback sedan would make it with the narrowing loops around sheer drop-offs and sharp muddled hills, but it was worth it when we finally arrived. It was just what you'd imagine. A modest A-frame redwood cabin with a wraparound porch. The view was idyllic, overlooking the wooded valley edge along the Sheepskin Hollow State Nature Preserve on the border of Pennsylvania and Ohio. We spent the first day unpacking and getting settled. Colleen helped me gather some kindling. She worried I was going to slip with my bum leg. I was fine, just limping a bit, favoring my left leg, but she insisted. She'd bring me the stacked logs from the wood shack, and we set up a fire, huddled together, stargazing and admiring the peaceful cadence of the forest at night. We were there for another day or so, when a snowstorm came through, rather suddenly, knocking out our power. We didn't know how long the power was going to be out, so I tried to make the best of it, cooking up the burgers that day on the grill. As we kept a log of the birds, we spotted the northern harrier, the rough-legged hawk, the brown creeper. The next day came, and the power was still out. My dear wife was a worrier. We hadn't thought to bring a cooler, and Colleen didn't feel comfortable leaving groceries outside. She was worried it'd attract critters, her big fear being a bear. I tried to reason with her, telling her that we had plenty of snacks to get by, and we'd make a trip into town once the power came back on. She spent most of that day worrying and trying to get cell coverage to call the cabin owner. There wasn't much more I could do to calm her, so I just continued to birdwatch and figured eventually she'd tire herself out and come relax on the porch with me. The sky grew into an overcast gray. The wind nipped at the skin. I kept hearing a call from the valley. Was it a short-eared owl? I skimmed the far tree line when I spotted a large gray mass nestled in a tree. I watched as it raised higher, almost standing past two more branches. It made a loud burst call, unfurling its wings as it turned, its red eyes locked on me. My body reacted in a wave of goosebumps, the hair on my neck raised. I stood, opening my eyes as wide as possible, trying to get the best angle of whatever this creature was. I yelled for Colleen as the creature leapt from the tree, soaring above the tree line, its wingspan, its shape. It was nothing that I'd seen in any book. I wasn't sure what I was looking at, I continued to yell for Colleen. By the time she made it to the edge of the porch, I'd lost sight of it. "What's the matter?" she'd asked, annoyed and on the phone. She held the phone to her side, trying not to lose service. I tried to explain what I saw. She sighed, briefly telling the cabin owner. "He said it's probably an eagle," she said before returning to the car. The power was back on shortly after, and Colleen was adamant about going into town to get more groceries, having thrown out everything in the fridge. I would have offered to go with her, but I needed to see that bird, that creature again. She insisted that I stay at the cabin and tend the outdoor fire for when she returned. The forest was eerily silent. Had it been like that all day? I wasn't sure. I scanned the eastern edge of the valley when I heard a booming screech which tapered to a strange warbling. I spotted it swooping down before landing on a fallen log. The tree shook upon the weight of that thing as it landed on it. Its body, its face, it was almost humanoid as it crept further into the foliage. I pulled a metal s'mores poker next to my chair. The sheer size of that thing. Would that even do any damage if it were to attack? A few hours passed when a heavy downpour erupted, snuffing out the fire and forcing me inside the cabin. The storm snuck up suddenly. We thought that we had an hour or so to get back, if the storm was even going to hit us. Colleen called from the grocery store parking lot, explaining that she had to turn around because the tires were spinning too much on the hill leading up to the cabin. After a couple of hours of waiting, she decided to stay at a motel in town for the night. I assured her that I was fine living off of the bucket-sized canister of pub mix and warm ale. She'd try again in the morning. I watched from the covered edge of the porch, still hearing what I thought were the calls of the beast through the pouring rain. Maybe seeing swooping flashes of the creature. I was eventually forced inside as the wind began to whip at all angles, drenching anywhere I set my chair. Dusk was quickly approaching as I turned out the lights on the porch. And then the interior cabin lights. Besides adding a log to the fireplace, I stood at the wall of windows munching handfuls of trail mix as I scanned. Rain pelted the sides of the cabin with rolling thunder and intermittent flashes of lightning. I thought I caught glimpses of the gray beast swooping closer to the cabin. Trees shook nearby until there was a heavy thud on the roof. I strained to listen for any other crashes, praying a tree hadn't fallen near the cabin. I heard a booming screech through the thunder, a heavy smack and scrape on the roof, before another thud near the chimney top. Were those footfalls? A warbling call echoed down the chimney, stirring the fireplace embers. I grabbed the fireplace poker, ready to fight as I frantically called Colleen. Standing in the center of the cabin, heart pounding, the phone rang and rang until finally connected. The voice on the other end was monotone, almost robotic. 40-8360, North, 80-5227, West. I pulled the phone from my ear. It was off. 8:55 p.m., the voice continued. The doorknob of the kitchen door leading outside began to rattle. My eyes widened, dropping the phone. The voice was in my head as I was met with those large, glowing red eyes at the small window of the kitchen door. I don't know how long I stood there in a trance before I dropped to the floor by the door, grasping the doorknob, praying the thing wouldn't get in. It was in my head. I was disoriented with panic. Those eyes. I awoke suddenly the next morning, frantically clawing at the fireplace poker as the doorknob rattled, my phone ringing. "George," my wife hollered from outside the door. She looked bewildered as I unlocked the door and clung to her. We cut our stay short, leaving shortly afterwards that day. I was confused. It all felt so real. Colleen was convinced that I'd gotten a bad bout of food poisoning. I couldn't bring myself to tell her what really happened. Did it happen? It wasn't until later that night, once we were home, that we saw the news coverage, the East Palestine train derailment. Colleen was beside herself, shocked, thankful we had left when we did. We would have been within the fallout of the black smoke cloud of hazardous chemical waste. I didn't want to lose my job at the news station, you see, and haven't told anyone about what happened that night, until now. After months of scouring forums and finding similar sightings, I think I'm finally ready to admit to myself what I encountered that night. that being that brings warnings of imminent disaster. That creature that takes on an earthly form, its name familiar to Appalachia. I know I was visited by the being named Mothman.
I was a young guy, and in between jobs at the time trying to make ends meet. So I got a job with my buddy Steve at his cousin's towing company. It was a little shady, but they paid cash under the table, so it'd do until I found the next job. On that autumn night, the town fair was in full swing, and people had the habit of parking anywhere they could to get around the parking fee. So it was easy pickings. We'd take turns scouting the area, pointing out undesignated spots, where our tow signs were. You'd be surprised how many people just park wherever. Trust me, it was a busy night for us. Well, around midnight, the demolition derby was starting to wrap up, so we had to take the last of the vehicles and leave before we were confronted with drunk, gun-wielding rednecks. I dropped the back loader, adjusting the bars under the front wheels of a small four-door, when I saw Steve's white cowboy hat as he hopped in the front seat of the truck. You could smell the beer on him. I tried to tell him to get to the passenger side, but he insisted, saying the lot was only 15 miles away. And frankly, I was used to him having a few throughout his shift. He chugged the rest of his beer and tossed the can out the window as he did a wide U-turn, the front tire dipping slightly into the ditch. The truck jostled, and I hung on to the Jesus handle, hollering at Steve to sober up a bit while checking to make sure we didn't lose the car. We rode at a steady 60 on that moonless, misty night. It was dark except our high beams meeting the worn asphalt and tree-lined road. He cranked the Country Golden Oldies, Hank Williams Jr.'s Whiskey Bent and Hellbound playing as he hit a pothole, rattling the truck. I turned to check the car when he slammed into something. I only caught a glimpse of brown fur as Steve struggled to maintain control, the tires screeching before we ended up front wheels deep in a ditch, the rest jackknifed behind us. "Did you see that?" he yelled wide-eyed as he kicked his door open and hopped out. I didn't know what was going on. I climbed down from my side of the truck and was immediately hit with that wet dog smell, mixed with roadkill. I pulled my collar up to cover my nose, my eyes following the blood splatter on the road to the bent front grille where a shattered headlight dangled. Steve was studying the damage as I stood with him at the front. "What'd you hit, man?" I anxiously asked, not seeing anything in the road or the ditch, but I could feel eyes on us. He pulled out a large clump of bloody brown fur from the curled grill. I don't know, man. I hit a guy." I began to anxiously rock from side to side, looking over my shoulder, second-guessing why I let him drive. I was convinced we were being watched. I could feel my skin tingling. I thought I heard footsteps in the crunching leaves. "We gotta call the cops." I tried to reason with him. We heard an echoing whoop from the far woods as I scrambled back into the cab. Steve reached under the front seat and withdrew a pistol. "Give me that," he yelled at me, ripping my phone out of my hand and sliding it into his back pocket. "You stay here. I'll be right back." I turned down the radio and reached over, pulling his door closed as another whoop came from the nearby woods. I watched as Steve walked tall to the tree line with the gun drawn stiffly at his side. He hollered something I couldn't make out as he began to step further into the trees where I lost sight of him. I shuddered when I heard what sounded like a tree fell. Steve's mangled body was launched from the woods, landing on the cab top, denting it badly, before sliding down the smashed windshield. I was hyperventilating at this point, hearing overlapping whoops in the distance. I reached through the bloody windshield, prying my shattered phone from his back pocket. Flight kicked in. I didn't know what to do other than crank up the radio and sprint into the woods to find help. I remember hearing the truck being torn to shreds as I ran and ran. Fortunately, my phone had already connected to 911 before Steve had taken my phone. Dispatchers were on their way, and they were able to hear bits of that chaotic night, having ruled it a tragic drunk driving accident. I don't know what we met on that desolate country road that night. You know, I'm a God-fearing man, but that couldn't have been human. I don't know what that was. Anytime I have to pass through that area, I slow down. Because I know there's something out there, something that, frankly, I don't want to come to terms with.